Noise department.
Have some fun with those traditional drinks that we've, you know, all loved for a long time. The Cosmo, the Martini, the Mule. These are very popular drinks for a reason. So let's just have a new fun variation of those traditional classics. This is not trying to create a new type of cocktail. It's a new twist on a large library of classics.
This is Thirst Trap, a beverage industry podcast. And I'm your host, Tracy Bradley.
Well, welcome back, everybody. How are you? I am so excited today. I have Rick Hewitt from Unicorn Distillery, and he has the most amazing spirits that I have ever seen in action. And that's saying a lot because I've seen a lot of spirits. I've tasted a lot of spirits, but I have never seen anything like this before in my life. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm thrilled to have you here. And Rick and I have a very fun meet cute story on LinkedIn.
Yeah, we did.
Rick found me because of the podcast.
I did.
Of all the things. And then he sent me a clip of his spirits in action, and I was even more blown away. So I was compelled to meet up with him, and now here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me out. It's been great to meet you.
Yeah, it's so good to meet you and to learn about what butterfly pea flower is. And when I say butterfly pea flower, it is an actual flower and it doesn't have anything to do with pea. It's P-E-A, everyone. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, the tea flower is really the catalyst behind what Unicorn Distillery is really, you know, celebrating and championing. It is, like you mentioned, a pea flower. Like it's a family of flowers, just like roses are a family of flowers. And then this is the butterfly type of the pea flower. And it's called that because of its chameleon changing ability with colors.
And I see that it's FDA approved.
It is, yes, which we seem to be the last to that table, but we finally did approve it, which is great.
I think, yeah, that's great. And so, I mean, it's not harmful. It's non-toxic. It's all natural. And it just does really cool things to your spirits, right?
Yeah, it's considered more of a coloring than a flavoring, but yeah, it really is a fun visual, you know, dynamic to the spirit.
So tell us what it does. What makes it so unique? Right?
Yeah, so the butterfly pea flower naturally produces this pigment in the long, I might screw up the pronunciation, but I think it's called anthocyanin. And this pigment is naturally sensitive to acidity. So when it's put in water, it's a real pretty blue color. And then as you start to make it more acidic, it turns purple and pink. And that color change is really vivid and vibrant and dramatic. And it creates quite the visual spectacle.
Quite the mixologist's dream, I think. I'm pretty sure. I can't wait to take it out and show it to my mixologist friends and see how blown away they are by this.
Totally.
This
where their creative goes.
So fun.
And that was really it. We wanted to give them the new tool. You know, the ingredient was approved. We knew we could give them some consistency in terms of the quality and the concentrations and give them the ability to then go showcase their creativity from the mixology standpoint without having to worry about how to infuse the tea flower into the spirit.
Right. And then not have to worry about, like, it makes it a little easier on them to make their magic happen, you know, and have a good little visual presentation. And all they really have to do is just their basic job of mixing a drink, pouring something acidic into it to make the color change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new tool for them, by no means an advanced tool, but it'll be great for the new bartender and the more advanced bartender to get a rise out of their guests and create those experiences that they're hoping to get.
So what made you decide to do this?
You know, I've got a background in beverage, grew up in a family of people who were just very into wine and food pairings and things of that nature. So I think it came about it pretty organically in the sense that I've always just been a beverage kind of nerd, if you will, big into craft beer for a long time. Then I got into ciders for a little bit, varied off into tech for a while, and then found my way back when I found this ingredient and thought that, you know, there was something here with the vodka and the tequila that could be blue, purple, pink.
So currently you have a vodka and a tequila?
Correct. Yep. We have a vodka and a tequila out, and we can really work with any unaged spirit.
Okay. So even a rum or...
And maybe a mezcal, or maybe we do non-alcoholics or CBD beverages. It really is us about the tea flower and creating that blue, purple, pink beverage experience. And we can work with a lot of clear bases to bring that.
That's so great. So then I have mocktail friends
And I think we're seeing a big growth in floral ingredients just overall, both alcohol and non-alcohol, and just a shift towards people interested in those flavors. It's not just the butterfly pea flower, it's elderflower, it's rose, it's lavender. We're seeing all those flavors kind of encompassed in non-alcohol and alcohol beverages.
Yeah, I saw something lavender the other day. Oh, no, it was at Starbucks.
Oh.
And you are based in...
Yeah, speaking of Starbucks, right? We're literally four blocks away from their corporate headquarters in Seattle, okay. Right there in downtown. Seattle being a great spot for beverage innovation with Starbucks and Red Hook and other beverage brands being kind of built out of that area. Certainly part of the soft water of that region that I think attracts so many beverage makers and was what led to some of the success of so many beverage makers from that region.
I've been once. I would like to go back.
Yeah, got to come through. Summer months are the best, the four summer months for us.
Yes.
Yeah. Seattle's sunny. It's really pretty.
So did you brought us tequila today?
I did. Yeah. I've shifted the vodka down in that little kit that we make, which only holds one bottle, but it comes with all the, you know, the glassware and the jar of the tea flower and stuff. But that we're in town for the trade show season, which is a great way to get out of Seattle in the winter months, is come down to Vegas for January show and March's show. So we have brought our tequila with us and we're at the show with both of them, but wanted to make sure you got a bottle to add to your collection.
Oh, well, thank you for that. So it pours blue.
It does.
Both of your spirits pour blue.
Yeah. And that's because when you put the tea flower into water, it pours a real pretty blue color. And we didn't want to lose that part of the experience. So what Unicorn is doing differently is we make our spirits less acidic, almost less acidic than water even. And the reason we're doing that is we want to use the tea flower in its natural blue state before we add any colors or acidity to it. Soda water is slightly acidic. You know, if I just add a drop or two of lime juice to the shot here, I've just added enough acidity that'll get that pigment to start to change colors on us. But if you go ahead and add a bunch, you can get it to kind of go pink, right?
Right. So we have a deeper blue and then we have a purple pink in the middle right now. Now the deeper blue one is turning into like a nice violet purple color. And then the one on the far right, guys, is just plain with nothing added. So that's just the traditional blue color that the liquid comes in.
Yeah. So when you're mixing with soda water, you're going to get experience just like this until you squeeze your lime or Topo Chico, which would be great with this. And then if you do go with like a margarita or, you know, grapefruit juice, like in a Paloma, you're going to see something with a lot stronger pink color. In the final beverage. So it really just does depend on how acidic the mixer is that you're using. And you can kind of dial in the color to match what you like.
I do like Topo Chico. I do. My son-in-law, who wrote our theme music for the podcast, Jose, he introduced me to that. So I'm going to have to bring it over there and let him play around with it and see.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he's going to really like it.
Yeah, we really like layering with this. You know, you can put the ginger beer on the bottom and put the, you know, the spirit on top and create that real cool purple and gold color look.
Oh.
Another fun way to do it is get the spirit in the glass with ice and just add the mixer table side or right before you serve the drink so that the guest sees that blue to purple to pink color progression happen, you know, before they start drinking their beverage. But yeah, that's the kind of the two main ways we encourage people to use this tea flower in our spirits.
And that would actually be a really fun thing when we're training like wait staff and bartenders, especially like cocktail waitresses. It's something that they can do and it can make them look like a mixology genius right at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And have some fun with those traditional drinks that we've, you know, all loved for a long time. The Cosmo, the Martini, the Mule. These are very popular drinks for a reason. So let's just have a new fun variation of those traditional classics. This is not trying to create a new type of cocktail. It's a new twist on a large library of classics.
We've all had our tableside guacamole, guys. Make way for tableside mixology. I'm ecstatic.
I like
about
that
this.
Phrase. Tableside yes. mixology. I haven't
tableside
heard that coin
mixology.
That way. I like that. I might have to take that from you. That was pretty good.
I'll let you borrow it.
Thanks.
Okay, so in a flammable drink per se.
I think it'd behave a lot like a regular 40 proof vodka would. And in that if you're probably lighting the cocktail on fire, you might want 151 rum or something else in with it. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, there is still 60% alcohol, you know, in the spirits. The tea flower doesn't add anything to an actual physical combustion. It just is very visually like it did.
And then what are the proof? What is the proof on the tequila?
They're both 80 proof.
They're both 80 proof.
Yeah, so 40%. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regular. And then when you pour it over ice, does the color change?
Ice is neutral. So no, that's the nice thing. Contro actually is also neutral. We found is one of the liqueurs with the nice orange sweetness to it. So if you do want to make a martini or a margarita, recommend using the Contro. But yeah, if you pour it right over ice, it's going to stay blue until you bring any acidity to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to try some tequila and I'm going to give you my feedback.
Great. Great. Start with the shot that's blue because that has no acidity to it.
Okay. So I'm starting with shot number one, which is just the plain tequila with no lime juice. Cheers.
And so you'll notice a lot of, taste of obviously just tastes like tequila, but there's not a back end sour bite.
There is not.
And that is the acidity that we've taken out with, how we make our spirits. And it's not so much that we've removed it so much as we've just neutralized it so that you can keep that pH balance and you don't get that sour burn from the vodka or the tequila.
I got zero burn.
Yeah.
Guys, this is me speaking right after drinking. I didn't do the whole shot. I drank it wasn't even a whole shot though. It was like maybe 3/4 of a shot. And I had drank about half of that and I could speak directly afterwards. And I didn't need a lime wedge or anything. It was very smooth, no burn, and wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could taste everything.
But all that agave is there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And then, of course, as you add your mixers, you're going to get that acidity back. So if you did want to try something like, would mimic a margarita, you can see that sour bite comes back. Still has a lot of tequila flavor, though. Obviously, that doesn't change.
Okay, so now I'm moving on to the one where he just squirted a bunch of lime juice into the shot, and it's the one that's the very nice lavender, it's unicorn lavender color.
Yeah, the geeky thing we've done here now is by adding the lime juice is we've brought a little bit of sweetness because there's some fruit sugar in the lime.
Oh my goodness.
And then the acid comes back, so it just brings a little more punch to the shot.
You guys, I've just found heaven in a shot glass. And this is lovely.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we find it to be really smooth tasting. The vodka the same way with people complimenting how they like to have it actually straight on ice because of that neutral acidity to it.
This would be perfect on a nice sunny patio.
Yeah, a little lemonade. Mm-hmm.
Preferably at one of my local hangouts downtown, maybe today around 2:00 if you're free.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, for sure. We'll be there.
Okay.
One of the other things I think, people like to learn is, how do you make a tequila in Seattle, right? That doesn't seem to quite align. And we always get questions on that. And so the backstory is in 2017, Mexico starts to approve bulk export of tequila for beverage makers in other countries to make drinks with. And we've seen the rise of ranch waters and RTD cans and a whole bunch of agave-based spirits have kind of come out because of those law changes. And We're participating in that. And there's some rules around what you can export out and what you can't export out. But we're bringing out a silver tequila, an unaged spirit, which is what, most of the Blancos are made of. Mm-hmm. The difference being that ours is 99% agave and 1% sugar vodka, because that's the law, that it has to be at least 99% mm-hmm. if it leaves the country. And so if you see a tequila bottle that says 100% Blue Weber on it, it was bottled in Mexico, at one of the distilleries mm-hmm. there. And if it doesn't say that, then it could be bottled outside of the country or it could not be. That doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't. It just, that it wasn't for sure bottled in Mexico. So you'll see that ours just says tequila, doesn't say the 100% Blue Weber on it. Because we do add a little bit of Seattle water, it becomes produced and bottled in Seattle when we make that tea flower infusion happen. And so that's how we are making a tequila out of Seattle.
Okay. And then what about the vodka?
In a similar way, we've got a corn-based vodka, American corn vodka, so similar to some of the biggest, brands in that category. And we're taking that same, very popular base of corn vodka and just making our color-changing magic happen with it.
Well, okay, so knowing what I know about the distillation laws in the U.S., in other countries, England, the U.K., places like that are famous for their gins and their vodkas, and their distillation processes, they can put a little pinch of sugar into their vodka and it's still called a vodka. But if you do it here in the U.S., it's a vodka liqueur.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Because they do that abroad to smooth it out, where here we have to be a little more intense
Yeah, and there's really, no sugar, yeah. Obviously no gluten. We don't do anything but add tea flour to the ethanol. So it is just where is that ethanol coming from? And in our case, it's corn, neutral grain, or from the Blue Weber agave, mm-hmm. and then a Seattle water and this tea flour that we're importing in from a co-op of farmers in Thailand.
This is amazing. I love tequila. Before today, I was mostly a reposado tequila girl, but yeah, you've just changed my mind on Blanco.
Yeah,
because this is super smooth, guys. There's no bite. You don't need to have your lime wedge in hand ready to go. Just drinking this.
Yeah, totally different experiences too, right? I mean, if you're fine sipping tequila that's aged in barrels, you are going to get a different flavor experience than what we're providing with this. But in terms of a sessionable, easy drinking patio summer approachable tequila, you know, that's fun. That was really what we were going for with our Blanco representation. So yeah, I just think they're just different tequila experiences. Cause I love those, you know, Añejos and extra Añejos. I mean, there's some mm-hmm. really fun, delicious tequilas out there that are really all about that taste. And mm-hmm. this brings much more on the visual side, but isn't an aged tequila, because then it would have to be brown and we wouldn't be able to make it pink.
Right.
And it wouldn't flow.
It would defeat the purpose.
Of our purpose, yes.
Yes.
And there's plenty of other guys doing the other purpose out there.
Yeah.
You know, guys and gals out there making great tequilas that, you know, are aged in really interesting barrel combinations. And from a purist palate pursuit, I don't want to, you know, knock that experience by any means, because that's just not our experience. What we're delivering is that visual.
So I have to ask, it's something that I typically ask the guests, is what was your gateway? What made you fall in love with spirits or beverages?
If I'm going to put it down to a specific beer, that might be tough, but it was craft beer for sure. You know, in college, just I'm up in Seattle, Washington, where a lot of craft breweries were working, you know, at the time. It was state controlled liquor. So that's why, right? I mean, I couldn't buy, you know, liquor only from liquor stores and state owned liquor stores, I guess, and wasn't available on Sundays. So everybody got into dark beers and really strong beers up there, and lots of breweries making double IPAs. And this is, you know, when I'm in college, so probably 2000, 2002, dating myself there a little bit, but that's when craft beer is also kind of just being discovered by the American palate in a new resurgence since the 90s. And so it was fun to be part of that, but I was kind of catching a trend that was already well established versus trying to create something.
But it wasn't. I mean, it depends, like probably in Seattle. Yes. That was definitely already established thing. Here in Las Vegas, it was more, I mean, I feel like maybe there were some like smaller local breweries, but then I feel like maybe 2005, then the trends really started coming. There became mm-hmm. more local breweries, because I had people that I know who fell in love with Blue Moon, you know, back in the day. And then Stella, and no, that's not a thing. Newcastle, you know, all these things. Mm-hmm. And then now, and then they just turned into total craft beer nerds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get started. It was, you know, the Mac and Jack's, or which is a big craft beer up in Seattle, was definitely the big popular one in that era. Still huge up there, massive.
I'm gonna have to try that when I visit there next time.
Yeah, Georgetown Brewing too. They've got a couple of fantastic beers that people in the Northwest just, you know, they're absolutely awesome and they're popular.
Okay.
And then I grew up in Southern California too, so I'm a big fan of Firestone Double Barrel and 805. Mm-hmm. Dad still lives in Paso Robles, so I get to go to that brewery every now and then, and that's a real treat in my year. So yeah, those are probably the you know. And then Boston beer, Sam Adams. I mean, that's
an OG.
Yeah, story's, I think, inspiring to a lot of beverage makers.
We can't say anything bad about Sam Adams.
Yeah.
You know, they're
great beer culture out in the Northeast.
They've
whole nother show there.
Kept it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, they have a loyal following and they've kept it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Vermont, all those states, great beers.
And I got started a little earlier than you did, but so my gateway was Pyramid Hefeweizen.
Mm, yeah.
Was my craft.
Right. Sure. Yep. That's a Portland-based brand.
Hefeweizen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Widmer Brothers, too, down there. Yeah, those two were really popular. Yeah, we had a wee beer craze then, for sure.
Yeah,
with Shock Top, Blue mm-hmm. Moon, and the Pyramids.
Yep.
And the Widmer Brothers, for sure. There was definitely a Hef craze happening.
There was, yeah. But thank you so much for your time. Thank you for stopping by. Unicorn Distillery is definitely going to be a presence here in Las Vegas. Stay tuned for that. All good things are going to be happening for you. I can definitely feel it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. If you're looking to get involved, you know, come find us on our website. Ask for us at your favorite place. That's the best thing you can do to show support, because when we go talk to retailers and they've heard of us and customers have already asked for us, it goes a lot quicker and easier for our sales teams.
I look forward to trying this out in my accounts and to see
what we do together.
See what we do together. This totally. Has been great. Thank you so much for stopping by, Rick.
For sure. Thanks All for right. having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I'm Tracy Bradley, and that's the Thirst Trap Podcast. Produced and edited by Gonzo Greg Spillane for Noise Department. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jose Torres. Please like and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcasts and share with your friends and associates in the beverage industry or anybody who drinks things. You can always visit and contact me at thirsttrappodcast.com, and you can find links to all the socials there as well. Till next time, cheers.